Welcome to the Teaching Space podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to the Teaching Space podcast. It's Martine here. Thank you so much for joining me. In today's episode, I am excited to introduce you to another guest, Daniel White, sleep expert. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Martine. Thank you for welcoming me, mate.
It's my pleasure. Rather than me introduce you to the Teaching Space listeners, I wonder if you could tell them a bit about who you are, what you do, and essentially what your superpower is.
That's brilliant. Yeah, well, I wear many hats, actually, but in the context of this conversation, I'm bringing in my sleep specialism. So I'm a registered nutritionist by trade, and I'm also a functional medicine certified health coach. Now, what this means is that I take a personal interest in a more holistic and natural view of our health and our bodies. And this journey, my personal journey, led me to become quite burnt out when it came to sleep and stress. And so the last 2 years of my life, I've been spending all the time that I can learning everything that I can about sleep, and now incorporating this into my kind of health education practice.
So essentially, helping people sleep better is your superpower by the sounds of things.
Yes, especially busy individuals, be they, you know, financial workers, teachers, all of the people who are trying to go above and beyond for others.
You mentioned a phrase just a moment ago, burnout. That is one that I'm really familiar with. And I think a lot of teachers listening to this episode will also relate to. One of the reasons I created this podcast was to help teachers and trainers stop taking work home in the evenings and weekends and start reclaiming their personal time in order to focus on their well-being. So I know through my own personal experience that sleep is an essential part of that bigger well-being picture. I wonder if you could perhaps shed some light on why sleeping well is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can completely resonate, you know, with everything that you've just said. Being in the teaching space, you know, very similar to being in the well-being space, we're really doing all that we can to support others in their learning, in their growth, and their development. But it can come with, you know, a cost to our own health and well-being if we aren't putting the kind of boundaries and rules, I guess, in place for, you know, how we can ensure that we're putting ourselves first and kind of filling our cup, as it were. But when it comes to sleep, I mean, sleep touches every single area of our lives. You know, there's a very famous quote by one of my favorite authors, Professor Matthew Walker, and he says, "Sleep is the tide that raises all of the ships in the harbor." So there isn't one single aspect of our mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual lives that are left, you know, unkept by our ability to achieve high quality sleep. So whether it's our ability to, you know, focus and concentrate, and perhaps in the context of teachers, you know, be attentive to students' needs, or, you know, get more tasks done more efficiently, or it's our mental health, because we know that almost every, you know, problem with our mental health or diagnosis that can come up, whether it's anxiety, depression, overwhelm, burnout, or more serious psychiatric conditions, these are all intimately interlinked with ongoing sleep problems. But also more aspects, so our metabolism, our weight, how our body manages and deals with stress. Almost every area, like I said, of our lives are impacted by our sleep. And for a long time, we've really focused the kind of narrative around, you know, nutrition and exercise, and perhaps, you know, stress management as being these kind of vital pillars of our everyday health. But I think what we've failed to appreciate in the last couple of decades, and especially, you know, as we become more of this technological, globalized nation, I guess, a world even, is that sleep is the foundation to everything. Without, you know, achieving deep and restful sleep, then we're really never going to be able to support our own health or to achieve, you know, optimal performance and kind of chase after our goals and dreams.
I can really relate to the idea of sleep underpinning all sorts of other aspects of well-being. And I can just, if I reflect on the last week. I've had a particularly busy week at work, and that's meant that I haven't placed enough importance on getting a decent night's sleep. And the effect of it has been that I haven't exercised as much as I normally would because I haven't had the energy and I've not been as focused as I normally would. So I can, you know, just on a personal level, I can really relate to what you're saying about it being that underpinning aspect of health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's vital. Being awake, actually, I laugh and say this to my clients, being awake is low-level brain damage. So every day when we're kind of performing complex tasks or, you know, using large amounts of energy, what's happening is there's lots of biochemical reactions going off in our body, and these all produce kind of waste products. And so actually, it's when we sleep at night and when we achieve deep and restorative sleep that our brain is able to effectively detoxify and kind of refresh itself. So that's, you know, just one other aspect. But you're right, you know, it touches every single area of our lives. What frustrates me is that quite often we fail to understand that every single area of our life also impacts our sleep. So it's kind of like this feedback loop. And a lot of the time when we talk about sleep, quite often that focus and that narrative is around like bedtime and evening time. But really, we fail to appreciate that, you know, every area of our lives impacts our sleep in the same way that our sleep impacts every area of our lives.
So how can busy, stressed teachers and trainers listening to this episode start to take steps towards achieving a better night's sleep? Perhaps you could share some top tips.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I think, you know, with any lifestyle behavior change, there needs to be an awareness piece. So people need to be willing to recognize that their sleep habits could improve or perhaps that they're struggling in this area. And then they have to, you know, really consider engaging with the right teachers or the right platforms where they can begin to learn more. I personally would not recommend the tabloids, the Daily Mail, the Guardian and their top sleep tips, because there's a much wider re-education piece around how and why we sleep. And I'd really like to dive into that a little bit more before I kind of give some top tools and tips. Is that okay?
That's a great idea. And as teachers, we are very familiar with the need for professional development. So starting exploring something through learning makes a lot of sense to us.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this would be interesting for any kind of biology or science teachers out there, because I'm probably going to get a little bit scientific in my explaining now. But really, our sleep is governed by our body's internal circadian rhythm. So the word circadian, circa coming from the Latin, approximately, and DM meaning day. So this is an internal biological rhythm that spans approximately 24 hours. Our sleep-wake cycle, so the time at which we go to bed and the time at which we sleep, and the quality of our sleep is a byproduct of the health of our circadian rhythm. But I need to point out that it's not only our sleep that's impacted by this kind of 24-hour body clock, if you'd like to call it that. It's almost every single system of our body. So every single area of our body is touched by this internal rhythm, and it impacts, you know, when we feel alert and when we feel energized, when we're most able to perform physically, when we're most primed to digest the foods that we eat and how we metabolize those foods, as well as our sleep. So I always tell this kind of little story. I do love it. I explain usually in person, you know, if you could see me right now, I'd be beating my chest and telling you that I'm Caveman Dan. And this little story of how Caveman Dan and his tribe lived for millions of years throughout our evolution as human beings. And now what would happen is that every single morning, Caveman Dan would wake up, and that's because the sun would rise. And when the sun rises, things, I don't know if you've noticed, get a lot brighter in our environment, and the temperature in the environment also increases. So at this point, Caveman Dan and his tribe would, you know, start fishing and hunting and gathering and kind of carrying out all of the necessary activities for survival that they could during hours of daylight. And then as the day kind of rolls on and towards the evening, what would happen is that Caveman Dan and his tribe would, you know, band together, they'd light a fire, they'd cook any of the foods in the kind of, you know, hunt that they'd captured that day, And then they would begin to do things like, you know, socialize, storytelling, dancing, singing, creating music, or perhaps, you know, even getting a little bit intimate. And then every single evening, the sun would begin to set. And as the sun sets, the kind of wavelengths of light, the type of light given off by the sun, it really changes. And it moves away from this kind of really bright blue light towards this subtler, warmer kind of orange and amber and yellow light. After the sun sets, the only light that, you know, our ancestors would have had access to was firelight, which again is this nice amber and orange and yellow. And one by one, you know, as the evening went by, the tribe would be staring up into the sky, you know, stargazing. They're probably much more likely to see stars than we are these days. And, you know, they would fall asleep. And then the next day, the birds would begin to sing and the sun would reach the horizon again and the light intensity and temperature would increase. And then this feeds back into the daytime activities and, you know, the evening activities and the setting of the sun again. So this is really like a process, a cycle, a circadian 24-hour cycle that we've been engaging with for millions and millions of years. And there are various aspects of that day-to-day ritual, such as light, such as temperature, such as movement, when we eat, when we socialize, when we relax, when we unwind, and especially the type of light that we're exposed to in the evening, that help to set and synchronize our circadian rhythm. So we call these different factors, these external environmental cues, we call them Zeitgebers. And this is just a German word that means time giver. So really, when our brain is exposed to these different Zeitgebers or external environmental cues, they set and synchronize our rhythm. The most important of these cues, and something that we have not really quite grasped yet, at least in the tabloids, about the importance of sleep health is light exposure. So when it comes to this circadian rhythm, you know, every plant, every animal, every cell, every organism on Earth has its own 24-hour circadian rhythm. Even, you know, down to the minute cells and the mitochondria that make up the kind of powerhouses of each of the cells in our body, they have their own 24-hour circadian rhythm. And really, you know, it's developed in tune with nature and the rising and the setting of the sun and the way that the Earth rotates and is exposed to, you know, the sun's light, essentially. So light exposure is the chief Zeitgeber. It's the master Zeitgeber. And for millions of years, you know, we were exposed to bright light throughout the day. And when we look up at the sun, which I don't recommend that you guys do without a pair of glasses on, what you would see, or what you would see if you measured the light of the sun, is a lot of blue and green light. So when we look at the spectrum of the wavelengths of light, these are further down one, the shorter wavelength spectrum. And blue and green light is very stimulating, very energizing. So for millions of years, when we were exposed to natural light first thing in the morning, this sent a direct signal to our brain, an area called the hypothalamus, which is where our kind of master circadian clock resides. And that signal, you know, it told us to wake up. It helped us to produce serotonin, which is, you know, our natural happiness neurotransmitter. It boosted levels of cortisol, which, you know, used appropriately. Cortisol is a daytime energizing stress hormone. And it increases levels of dopamine. So it helps us to feel motivated and, you know, happy and focused and energized to go out and complete all of those daytime activities like hunting and fishing and gathering in order for us to survive, essentially. And then as the day goes on, the wavelengths of light given off by the sun, they change, particularly towards the evening and towards sunset, when a lot of the blue and green light is stripped out of the sun and we get more orange and amber and yellow. And orange and amber and yellow, they don't have the same effect on our brain as the, we could say, the more stimulating blue and green wavelengths. And so for millions of years, our ancestors, you know, closer to sunset and especially after sunset, we're only exposed to these warmer wavelengths. Now, the problem, the biggest problem for our health, I would argue, you know, maybe even more so than the processed foods that we've developed in the last 100 years, and, you know, the high stress levels that our society kind of imbues us with, is a huge change in the way that we interact with light. Because around about 120 years ago, Thomas Edison, you know, great guy, invented the light bulb, and shortly afterwards, electric power plants. And what this really meant in the industrialized age is that we could now, you know, get workers in the factories for 24 hours a day. And we could artificially manipulate our body's rhythms by exposing ourselves to excessive amounts of this blue and green light, which is abundant in modern lighting. And what it would do is it would keep us awake longer and keep us energized and, to a degree, you know, keep us focused. Now, the problem we have here is that in our modern world now, especially with the invention of the LED light bulb, which we all saw as this, you know, wonderful energy efficient invention, if you like, that we are bombarded with blue and green wavelengths of light, especially after sunset or in the later parts of the afternoon and evening, when it would naturally be disappearing from the sun. And so what used to be the most important cue to our body and the chief signal of, you know, bright light in the morning, in the daytime, and then warmer light in the evening, is now being confused because we're essentially sending, you know, a message to our brain in the evening, every evening, especially if, you know, we're marking papers late, or, you know, we're spending excessive amounts of time on technology, which is pretty much the norm in the COVID era. And then what we're really doing is we're sending the wrong signal to our brain. And as a result, our bodies aren't able to wind down and most especially produce our key sleep hormone, which is called melatonin. And our brain produces melatonin in the absence of light. So every day for millions of years, going back to, you know, the idea of caveman Dan, it was in the evening when those warmer wavelengths would come out that our body started to produce melatonin, which leads us into high quality, deep and restorative sleep.
I'm just reflecting on all of that. There's so much good information there, Dan. I'm just thinking about when I wind down in the evening, invariably it involves some sort of bright white stimulating light. It might be that I'm sitting in front of the telly. It might be that I'm, you know, doing something on my iPad or playing a game on my Nintendo Switch. I think I've just come out as a gamer there. you know, it all involves light. And I'm just reflecting on that, thinking, really, what I should be doing is perhaps just having a lie down in a room with my salt lamp on as an absolute maximum and just chilling and having that change in status. It's time for a quick ad break. I'm a huge fan of audiobooks from Audible, and I want to share the love. Grab yourself a 30-day Audible trial and free audiobook at theteachingspace.com/audible.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. You raise the point of, you know, modern life, and it's not to you know, say that modern life is a bad thing. I will hold my hand up and say that last night, you know, I was video gaming until probably 9:30 at night. And I am not, you know, the sort of person who doesn't use technology in the evening. But what we need to understand is that our exposure to these kinds of light, and especially to technology and connectivity, you know, whether it's laptops, iPads, games consoles, the lighting around our house, LED spotlights, even the little bright bulb in our fridge a lot of the time, you know, we're exposed to more technology and more light than ever before. So we need to think about, and thankfully there are, smart strategies that we can begin to put in place to reduce the harm that this technology is doing to us. Because there is research that shows that 90% of us use technology in the hours before bedtime. And, you know, if I was going to come onto your podcast and say to your listeners, that's got to stop, you know, you've got to turn your technology off hours before bed, how many people are going to, you know, be able to do that? Especially
they'd be like, yes, Dan, absolutely, we'll do that. No.
and especially because, you know, the light given off by these screens is highly addictive. So blue light stimulates the dopamine reward circuitry in our brain. So they're, you know, Apple, Microsoft, they're very clever people, and they design these technology devices and these algorithms of, you know, social media and how games work to keep us engaged, right? And, you know, keep us in or on, if you like. But there are some fantastic tools and products that can help us to protect ourselves against the effects of blue light, in particular in the evenings. So would you like to hear a bit more about those?
Love to, yes. Please tell us more.
The first, and something that I personally believe is the most necessary health accessory of the 21st century, something that is going to become normalized in the coming 5 to 10 years as we begin to acknowledge the impact that light is having on our health, is something called blue light blocking glasses. Have you ever heard of those before?
Yes, I have, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a variety of different types that you can buy. There are some blue light blocking glasses that can be used during the daytime, and they tend to have a clearer or a more yellowish lens. And what they do is they block a certain amount of the blue light, so somewhere between 20 and 40% of the light that comes from LED lighting, perhaps in the office or at school, and also from computers. Because as well as overexposure to blue light in the evenings, our LED lighting in the daytime is actually, you know, quite often causing a lot of headaches, migraines, eye strain, and kind of daytime fatigue as well. So there are daytime type of blue light blocking glasses that help to basically remedy that issue. And then there are the nighttime lenses. And then the nighttime lenses, they tend to come with either an amber or a red lens. The amber lens, they block 99.9% of blue light, and the red lens, they're just a little bit darker. Some people sometimes find those a little bit difficult to wear because they are really dark. They also block out all of the green light as well, whereas the amber ones don't quite block all of the green. But the blue light is the main thing to kind of be avoiding. So I've been wearing these glasses every single evening, bar maybe, you know, a couple of year. I don't tend to wear them out, you know, in a restaurant or sometimes in a nightclub.
It's a look.
I have worn them in some strange places, but I'm quite confident to do that. I've been wearing them every night for about three, sometimes 4 hours before bed, certainly after kind of a sunset. And what they do is they just directly block all of that dangerous, harmful, you know, light that is not only ruining our ability to produce melatonin, but it's also offsetting our circadian rhythm. It's disrupting our metabolism. It's disrupting our immune system. It's disrupting our ability to think and concentrate. It's ruining our mood, our motivation. It's stopping our brain from detoxing. And it's actually now been shown to promote the growth of cancer cells. So this blue light, you know, whilst it's not the devil and the enemy, and we need it during the daytime, it is the single biggest disruptor of health that we just aren't aware of at the moment, and especially when we're exposing ourselves to large amounts in the nighttime. So yeah, these glasses, when I bought my first pair, they were ridiculously expensive. I think they cost about $150 or something. And, you know, as a passionate health advocate, I just couldn't get my head around how I could get these to so many people for that price. And so my company decided to invest in kind of some children's and adults pairs and stuff like that, so we can make them more accessible to people. But as I've said, you know, these are going to become normalized as kind of the most necessary health accessory of the 21st century, because they work, right? You wear them, and the same night that you wear them, or the same day that you wear them, for whatever purpose you're using them, you feel the benefits and you feel the effects. So that is probably my number one tip. It's the thing that we can all do. Yeah. Even if we are using technology. But there are also some other cool things going on. So there's a program called Iris. I believe the website is iristech.co, and we can obviously put the link in the show notes.
Absolutely.
This is like a plug-in for your laptop, computer, whatever, and it changes the lighting of the screen. So in the daytime, I have the health setting on, and what it does is it just slightly dims the light and takes some of the harshness out of the LED, so I don't get headaches. And then in the evening, it's got a sleep mode, which strips like all of the blue and the green light, and it becomes kind of really reddish, the screen. So if I am working in the evenings on my computer, or if I am playing a game, admittedly, you know, I find it not quite so enjoyable to watch David Attenborough on a red screen. And sometimes gaming can be a bit difficult, but for all other purposes, you know, the ability to just have a program such as Iris, and there's also another one called Flux, F L UX. These are lifesavers. If people are wondering if they've ever heard of these programs before, I do recommend Iris over Flux, because Iris also helps to reduce the background flicker of the screen. And unfortunately, our brains can't perceive that LED lighting is flickering constantly, and it's really stimulating to our brain. So the Iris platform is fantastic. And then, you know, finally, just thinking about the lighting that you've got around the house. You know, quite often we have these fantastic, you know, setups with dimmer switches that we never dim, or we have a lot of overhead LED lighting, and we have to understand that any blue lighting over our head is going to be perceived and recognized by our brain as the sun. That's the only other thing it can, you know, compare that to. So there are, as you mentioned, you know, a variety of different types of lights. Pink Himalayan salt lamps are fantastic. I've got one in my bedroom with a dimmer switch. So, you know, when I'm reading a book in the evening, I can just begin to slowly dim the light as the evening goes on. But also anything with a red or amber bulb. A lot of my clients will, you know, change a few bulbs throughout the house and have them on kind of different systems so that they can have kind of amber nighttime lighting or kind of full LEDs in the daytime. And also, you know, just kind of going back to basics and using like more candles around the house can be fantastic as well.
Oh, there's so much good advice there, Dan. Thank you. I like the idea of getting more salt lamps around the house. I've got two salt lamps in the bedroom, but actually I quite like the idea of having them in different rooms as well, so you can really take that light down. And also, I love a scented candle. I don't know why I'm not using candles more. It's such a good point.
Yeah, scented candles are amazing. And, you know, a lot of the time when we talk about sleep and sleep hygiene, which is like this catchphrase that's, you know, been thrown around, especially in the media a lot, we're, you know, recommending that people use lavender sprays and drink chamomile tea. And whilst those things are great, they are not the fundamental foundations of what's going to move the dial on your sleep, which is attending to these different factors that impact your circadian rhythm. So, yeah, candles, especially, you know, scented lavender candles and stuff like that can be really great and really relaxing in the evenings. So far we've spoken about kind of evening light, but I need to kind of flip the coin as well, and I need to really solidify the importance for your listeners of exposing yourselves to the right type of light in the daytime. Because whilst it's really important to block that light at night, that blue light, on the other side, we need to anchor our circadian rhythm really as soon as possible after we wake up. If you have to imagine that caveman Dan, he was exposed to some form of natural light. Now, this might not have been, you know, direct sunlight. It wasn't sunny every single day of the year, and it, you know, never will be. But natural light outdoors, it's got a much greater level of lux, which is kind of the energy efficiency that we use to measure light. So the lux of any light outdoors, even if it's overcast or sunny, is much higher than indoors. So for millions of years, we would have been exposed to natural light after waking. And the problem that we have now, especially as, you know, we get into the darker season, is the fact that we will leave our house in the morning after having only been exposed to, you know, some LED lights in our home. And then we'll head straight into work, where it's also very lit with LED lighting, but we're never getting any of this natural light exposure. It's a lot easier in the summer, but if we fail to get and set our circadian rhythm with the correct signal for light, then we aren't going to feel motivated, we aren't going to feel energized, and our mood is going to be kind of quite flat throughout the morning. So it's really important that not only are we avoiding the light at night, but we're also strongly anchoring our circadian rhythm first thing.
That's really interesting, actually. I'm just reflecting on the fact that in the morning, several times a week, I'll take the dog out for a walk first thing, and I always feel more awake and just ready to face the day if it's slightly later in the morning. So a couple of days ago, I went out super early and it was dark, and I came back and it was still dark. But when I've gone out slightly later and it's light, it's a really good start to the day for me.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And, you know, the thing is, we in our modern world, you know, we have structure and we have routine, so we'll be getting up at the same time every day. Now, ancestrally, you know, caveman Dan might have laid in longer in the winter, he might have slept longer. And in fact, just from my personal experimentation, when I've made a real effort to cut out all of the blue light in my environment, which is very difficult, you know, I lived with candles for around a couple of weeks when I was doing some yeah, like I said, some experimenting in the last couple of years, I found that, you know, I was falling asleep as early as 8 p.m. and not waking up until, you know, 6 a.m. or 7 a.m.
Wow.
So yeah, you can sleep for a lot longer than we do. But you know, given our modern lives and understanding, many of us are getting up, you know, 5:30, 6:30, 7 a.m. on the dot every day. And obviously, as we enter this darker period, it's quite often dark when we wake up, like you said. So, you know, when are we getting our natural light exposure, and are we able to get it before, you know, we begin work or we're in school or whatever's kind of going on? But I love how you have made that connection, because, you know, it's biology, really.
Definitely. So getting some light exposure as early on in the morning as is possible, depending on the time of year, would be a really good step for teachers to take to feel energized throughout the day.
Yes, one of the two most important steps, I would say, in order to sleep well. And not only sleep well, but, you know, as I mentioned, the knock-on impact of sleep is affecting every area of our lives, and our circadian rhythm is really controlling the way that every single system of our body functions, whether it's our, you know, our brain producing the right neurochemicals at the right time of day, or our digestion producing the right digestive enzymes to digest food at the right time of day. And it's really important. Now, I almost went into food then, and we'll talk about that in 1 second, but I just want to finish talking about light by saying that I'm sure some of your listeners are kind of cringing, going, well, how am I going to get my natural light then? Because I have to be in work, right? You know, I have to be in this place at this time. And thankfully now, again, you know, we're looking at evolutionary understanding and modern know-how, and we're developing circadian-friendly lighting. So I'm sure you might have heard of a SAD lamp before.
I have, yes.
So yeah, SAD stands for seasonal affective disorder. So it's a type of depression that occurs in the winter months, funnily enough, when we're not getting light exposure that we need to feel happy and healthy. So, you know, we are now able to provide lighting that is similar to the wavelengths given off by the sun. And we do this in the form of a SAD lamp. So you can get these, you can put them on your desk, you can build them into your office lighting, all this sort of stuff. Again, our company, you know, provides a kind of SAD lamp, like a desktop one. And they are a great way for people to ensure that they're getting that right amount of light exposure in the mornings when they are otherwise unable to get out due to, you know, work or other commitments.
It is gratifying that technology can help in this scenario, because sometimes it just feels like technology is a bad thing, but actually in this situation it's helping fill a gap that certainly some listeners will be struggling with, because as you say, you know, you're getting up super early. It's not so much the case in Guernsey, but you might have to do a long commute in a train. You're being exposed to that artificial light all the time, and by the time you get to work, you've got no time to be outside, so you go straight in. Horrible strip lighting and things like that. I can really see how at this time of year teachers might struggle. That's a really good solution.
Yeah, that's certain. You know, just to kind of bring that kind of scenario and story together, and, you know, maybe using that kind of teacher as a case study, you know, these are exactly the sort of people who can benefit from these gadgets and this technology, from, you know, as you've said, you know, commuting into work and being able to use their light box or their SAD lamp, as we call them, for 5 or 10 minutes when they get into work, so that they're energized, and then, you know, protecting themselves with either the Iris daytime program or the kind of daytime blue light blocking glasses, so that they're not getting headaches and migraines and damaging their eyes throughout the daytime. And then, you know, in the evening, again, using this technology or the glasses or special types of lighting around the home to make sure that their light environment is set up properly in the evening. And this is something, you know, that I've been focusing on, really, really, really focusing on every day of my life now for the last 2 or 3 years. And I've gone from, you know, burnout, exhaustion, a huge amount of requirement to rework and redo a lot of the things that I was working on, because I was just, you know, so wrought with errors in everything I was doing, because my focus, my concentration and my brain power just wasn't there anymore. And I can really resonate with anybody, you know, entrepreneur, teacher, anybody in the health industry in particular, who is finding it difficult to keep on top of the workload, especially in the wrong light environment.
And ultimately, one of the main purposes of the Teaching Space podcast is to help people be as efficient as possible in their day job, to allow them that time and space at the weekend to spend time on themselves and things like that. So it really just sounds like a big balancing act. And everything that you're saying points towards huge benefits in the areas of efficiency and just feeling so much better. So it's great advice.
Yeah, thanks. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because I always say that, you know, sleep is so nuanced, right, to each individual. So you have people who consider themselves to be good sleepers. You have people who consider themselves to sleep okay. Maybe they, you know, they know that the quality of their sleep's not that great. And then, you know, as we go further and further down the spectrum, we have full-blown insomniacs. Everybody can learn how to sleep better, every single person. But the factors that are the challenge or the obstacle for you are going to be different to the challenge or the obstacle for somebody else. As I said, you know, light is universal, and changing the way in which we interact with light, if nothing else at all, will transform the way that we sleep and live our lives. But it's not only light, you know. I touched on some other of these Zeitgebers or time cues in our little talk at the beginning. And, you know, food is an important one. You know, the type of food that we eat and the time at which we eat. Because if we went back to being a hunter-gatherer, we weren't going to be eating during the middle of the night because there was no light to do so. And so it's interesting that our biology and our digestion is best primed to metabolize foods in the daytime, in the light. Which is really interesting because they've shown that, you know, the same, for example, cookie eaten at lunchtime compared to eating at 9 p.m. has a wildly different impact on your blood sugar levels and on your fat storage, for example. And also, you know, the type of foods that we eat. So in the evening, high sugar foods that really raise our blood sugar levels can lead to a lot of nighttime awakenings and issues throughout the night sleeping, because our blood sugar levels can dip lower in the evenings and throughout the night. And quite often, you know, people, my clients especially, will say, you know, I wake up at 2 a.m., 3 a.m. every night, I'm wide awake, you know, I can't get back to sleep, and I start thinking about something or work or this or that. You know, what is it? And we can trace it back to, you know, a high sugar dessert eaten for dinner. Because of the impact that low blood sugar levels have in basically stimulating us to wake up and go out and hunt food. Because if our blood sugar levels were low, then it was a threat to our survival. So it's always, you know, our evolutionary biology at play when it comes to sleep, when it comes to how our lifestyle choices are impacting our ability to achieve deep and restful sleep.
I guess alcohol comes into that as well, because obviously caveman Dan probably wouldn't have been having a few beers in the evening, I don't think. And I, you know, while I'm not a big drinker, if I have had alcohol in the evening, I can really recognize the effect it has on my sleep. I do not sleep well after a few gin and tonics. It just doesn't sit well with me. So I guess you can relate that back to caveman Dan's experience as well, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a few things that caveman Dan didn't have, many things.
No, but, gin and, you
know,
tonics.
No gin and tonics. I am a stickler for a gin and tonic, I must admit. He certainly didn't have alcohol. Actually, he would have perhaps found, you know, some fermented honeys or something like that, so he might have been able to get himself a little bit goo goo gaga occasionally. But generally speaking, he didn't have alcohol, he didn't have stimulants, he didn't have caffeine. So these are, you know, two things that can wildly impact our sleep quality. When it comes to alcohol, it's most especially because it suppresses certain types of our sleep. So we haven't had a chance to dive into really how we sleep. But if I briefly touch on that, we basically move through a number of sleep stages throughout the night, from lighter into deeper, and then into something called rapid eye movement sleep. And each of these different stages of sleep, they have different functional benefits or purposes for our health. And we are really experiencing an epidemic of poor sleep quality. And in that, I mean, you know, we're not getting as much deep restorative and rapid eye movement or REM sleep as we once were. And this alcohol, as well as nicotine, as well as caffeine, as well as light, as well as, you know, eating at the wrong time of day and exercising at the wrong time of day and the way that we socialize and engage with technology and all of these modern factors that are sleep disruptors, what they're actually doing is they're reducing our body's ability to get the deeper, more restorative states of sleep. So alcohol, yeah, unfortunately, if consumed shortly before bed, will disrupt your ability to achieve deep and rapid eye movement sleep. However, you know, there is some research showing that, you know, a drink earlier in the day, you know, with sufficient time for your body to clear out the alcohol, is not as disruptive for sleep. So again, you know, we always have to look at this evidence and really bring in like a reality check Because if the recommendations that I gave my clients and the things that I taught, they weren't realistic and they weren't applicable to people's lives, then we would not engage with them.
Oh, that's so true. So we're not saying you can't go on your phones anymore and you have to stop drinking gin and tonics. You just have to be a little more mindful perhaps with when you do things.
Yeah, well, that's what circadian health is all about. It's about becoming accustomed to doing the right things at the right time of the day. It's as simple as that, really. People think of it, you know, they say to me, oh, well, you know, what's this new fad, circadian health, circadian rhythm? And I say, well, actually, little do we know that it's the foundation and it's been with us since the beginning and it's really been underpinning every process of our evolution and our health. So, you know, quite often I have clients who will have some habits that are, you know, very difficult to change, such as their technology use, such as their light use that we've already discussed. And what I would try to begin with is, you know, just one or two changes, such as wearing blue light blocking glasses or using these kind of light filtering apps, and then asking people to reflect on, you know, how they feel subjectively in terms of their sleep, so that I can kind of get them hook, line and sinker for making other changes that will, you know, enhance and benefit their circadian rhythm as well. And I'd love, you know, I would love to be able to educate your listeners more on all this, and obviously yourself as well. And I'm sure you can you can guess from the amount of speaking that I've done so far that, you know, I'm really passionate about this, and I could go on for hours and hours and hours. And there is, you know, there is so much, whether it is nutrition, exercise, you know, how and when we move. Again, like I said, you know, what we eat, when we eat, how we interact with alcohol, caffeine, even prescription medications, not meditations, sorry, I mean to say medications, because meditation was coming up next. you know, the way in which we respond to and manage the stress that we experience in our lives, as well as, you know, how we build in routine and relaxation and regularity. So I always say that our sleep and the quality of our sleep is an amalgamation of all of the lifestyle habits that we perform throughout the day. And, you know, what happens as a result of those lifestyle habits is that we do or don't achieve high quality sleep. And then our ability to achieve high quality sleep, that kind of dictates our motivation to engage with healthy lifestyle habits. So it's a bit of a, you know, a what came first, the chicken or the egg scenario, in terms of did our lifestyle damage our sleep, or did our poor sleep damage our lifestyle? But as I've said, you know, some of these core foundations, particularly, you know, when we eat, how we expose ourselves to light, they are the low-hanging fruit that can begin to really move the dial on our sleep quality.
There are some really good actionable strategies there for people listening to this thinking, I really need to sleep better. And, you know, there's so much that they can do. But I think your idea of just taking one or two of those elements as a starting point, starting there and then kind of building up, that's really good advice. Dan, you've been so generous with everything you've shared in this episode. I really appreciate it. Is there just one last thing you want to leave people with before I ask you where people can find you online?
Yeah, this is something we didn't touch on. And I think it's, you know, it needs to be said. I experienced this as a young entrepreneur running my own business and with a high workload. And I'm sure that teachers experience this too. And it's a lack of boundaries. You know, you mentioned it at the beginning, needing to put work to bed at night, essentially.
Literally.
I'm putting technology to bed. And, you know, my friends laugh at me because I, in my drawer in my bedroom, I have drawn a little bedroom on a piece of paper. And every night I get to a certain time, an hour, or sometimes if I'm, you know, feeling really disciplined, an hour and a half before bed, I will put my phone in the drawer in its bed.
I love it.
And, you know, that just creates that healthy boundary, because otherwise, if we're not saying I am unavailable at this time of day, then, you know, we are never going to take the pressure off ourselves. We're never going to provide ourselves with the space and the ease and the peace to be able to, you know, relax and unwind and switch off from the stresses in our lives. And when I say the stresses in our lives, I mean, you know, eustress, positive stress, as well as, you know, the more detrimental stress, because every single thing that stresses us out in our lives, especially as teachers, especially as health educators, is intimately intertwined with the values that we uphold in our lives. And if you removed all the stresses in your life, you would remove a huge amount of purpose from your life as well, to the point where it may not even be worth living. But again, it's about, you know, how we manage and respond and build boundaries around the impact that that stress is having in our lives. So yeah, that is my number one piece of advice is, you know, set some boundaries at least 16 minutes before bed if you can, to really come off technology and allow your brain the opportunity to wind down and get ready for sleep.
I love that. Put your phone to bed a good hour or so before you go to bed. That's a top tip. Dan, thank you so much for spending so much time going through that. If people listening to this episode want to find out more about you and what you do, where can people find you online, Dan?
Yes, so they can find me on my personal website. So I coach people and I provide services for organizations, training programs, online education, webinars, in-person seminars, and that's danielwhitehealth.com. So Daniel White, the color white, and as you said, you know, we'll put these links in the show notes. But my sleep brand and our sleep company is called Sleep Better, Live Better. So sleepbetterlivebetter.co.uk. We've got the online store where we sell all of the glasses and, you know, the lighting devices. But I'd really love to just plug my online program. So I was actually working with your husband, you know, to develop this and do all the recording in the filming studio.
That's right.
In the last year or two, and that was a really exciting experience. But what I've done is I've created an online learning platform with videos, with written downloadable content, resources that takes people on a journey through learning about applying everything that they need to know about healthy sleep and circadian rhythms, even down to the fine tuning and creating your own personalized sleep improvement plan. So if people wanted to check out our online sleep band, they'll be able to see that program there. And kind of a question for your listeners is, you know, do you know any organizations, perhaps it's your school, or any charities or anybody you work with or teach that needs support with sleep? Because I am incredibly passionate and I really feel that everybody should be able to access this kind of information in education. Unfortunately, a lot of the research that I've discussed today, you know, it takes so long for it to become evidence-based practice. We don't have that long to wait. You know, levels of mental health, levels of burnout, all of these things, you know, adults, kids, teachers, students are reaching epidemic highs, especially around COVID. So I'm really keen to get as much of this information to as many people as possible. So if there are people who need the information, I just really recommend that your listeners get in touch with me. If they've got any suggestions about how we can spread the information further, you know, we've created all these resources and we're only too happy to spread them and distribute them as far and as wide as possible so that people's health can benefit. So one last thing as well, I've got some awesome free resources on my website, a couple of PDFs that people can download. One of them is called Why Light is Just as Important as Food. And the other one is called How to Hack Your Smartphone, PC and Laptop for Better Sleep. And the reason I created those resources, which anybody can access, and we'll put a link in the show notes, is that this is information that can help you to start sleeping better tonight. So it's actionable, it's realistic and straightforward.
Daniel White, thank you so much for coming on the Teaching Space podcast. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and I hope you'll come back again in the future.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have to do a round two.
Wasn't Dan a great guest? I hope you enjoyed this episode. There is so much to take from it, and I really want to recommend that you check out the show notes at theteachingspace.com/109 to access all the links and resources he mentioned. I don't always record a wrap-up section after an interview, but there are a couple of things I wanted to mention to you. The first is that I'm hoping to do some podcast episodes in the future involving questions from listeners. So if you would like to send me an audio question so I can include it on the show, it might be that I do an Ask Me Anything episode, or your question might inspire an entire episode. If you want to send me a question or a comment, you can do so by email. Just record a voice memo on your phone and email it to hello@theteachingspace.com, or you can find me on Voxer. You'll find me there as The Teaching Space. In addition to that, I wanted to mention that the Teaching Space community has relaunched. I moved it into a new platform a few months back now,
And it's working really well, the new platform. We're on the Mighty Networks platform, and it's got an app, and it's just so much better than it was previously. So if you've not had a chance to join the community, I highly recommend it. There's some really exciting discussion going on. Hop over to community.theteachingspace.com to join us. That's all for today's episode. I hope you'll tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.